Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, everybody. We got a very different one today, I guess by definition. That's for a change. My guest is Ed Shelleby, who is my communications director and deputy chief of staff for almost all my time in the Senate. He came on board after a year or so. And I know you're going to really enjoy this because Ed's just a very funny man and a great guy to boot. And by the way, an extremely effective communications director, a job he now holds for Tina Smith, who's succeeded me as junior senator of Minnesota. And what we mainly talk about is what it was like to work in the Franken Senate office. We just had a great time and were very effective. When I got there, you remember I was seated after a nine-month recount. I clobbered Norm Coleman by 312 votes. It was the narrowest clobbering in history. So when I got there in July 2009, I was the 60th Democrat. So 312 votes in Minnesota made the Affordable Care Act possible. When I finally got there, one of our strategic objectives was to demonstrate to Minnesotans and pretty much to everyone that I was serious about the job. So I put my head down. I was a workhorse, not a show horse, as they say. So I did only Minnesota press, and there was a special emphasis on my not being funny or being caught trying to be funny. And I understood that. And for my first term especially, I was very careful not to be funny, publicly anyway, not in hearings, not in speeches on the floor, really nowhere except the office. And we had so much fun in the office. One of the reasons we had one of the lowest, if not the lowest, turnover rates in the Senate is that my whole team was very effective. The legislative team, the communications team, and you'll get a flavor for that with this conversation with Ed Shelleby. But we just had fun. We had a lot of fun and got a lot of great work done. You'll love this interview. It's like candy. Now, what's not candy in any way is what Republican state legislators are doing around the country to subvert our elections and our democracy, which is in jeopardy. Not only are these states passing laws that will effectively suppress the votes of people Republicans don't want to vote, we are seeing laws written which essentially give partisans in these states the power to overturn election results and steal elections. And this is no exaggeration. For example, in Arizona, the state legislature passed a law taking the power to determine the winner of elections from the Secretary of State of Arizona, who happens to be a Democrat, and gives that power to the Attorney General of Arizona, who is a Republican. And the great part about this is that this rule expires in January of 2023 because, say, a Democrat gets elected Attorney General and a Republican gets elected Secretary of State, then they'll just reverse that. This is as naked as it gets. And they are doing this or attempting to do this wherever they can, which is in states that are controlled by a Republican state legislature and governor like Texas and Florida and Georgia and Arizona. And this is beyond dangerous. This is an existential threat to our democracy. We cannot allow this to stand. And that's why, as I see it, Republicans have really given Democrats in the Senate no choice. We have to pass the For the People Act. That's the same Voting Rights Act that passed the House, and it addresses the laws around the country that have been designed to make it harder for certain people to vote. And now, which give Republican officials the power to reverse the results of elections they don't like. The For the People Act is the name of the same bill that passed the House's H.R. 1, and it makes certain reforms to clean up our elections. First, it would get rid of the partisan gerrymandering that we see by state legislatures and governors all over the country. This is how you draw up the map within a state to determine congressional districts and state legislative districts. And this is how you have routinely gotten very heavily disproportionately weighted state legislatures and congressional delegations in states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, Wisconsin and North Carolina. And the district lines are drawn in such a way as to vastly overrepresent Republican voters. The For the People Act makes it easier to register to vote, easier to vote early. It creates disclosure for dark money. This is the battle for America's democracy, which is under systemic assault. You saw that last fall. You saw Republicans in states, in Congress, in the White House attempt to reverse the results of an election that Joe Biden won nationally by 7 million votes. Right now, the For the People Act is sponsored or co-sponsored by 49 Democratic senators. Joe Manchin is the one holdout, and he won't tell us exactly what the deal breaker is for him. Now, remember, Manchin represents West Virginia, a state that went for Trump by nearly 40 points. And just like John Ossoff, just like Raphael Warnock, but for Joe Manchin, Democrats don't have the majority in the Senate. But even if we get Manchin's vote on this, we'd only have 50, and that doesn't beat a filibuster. And Mitch McConnell is not going to let 10 Republicans unravel everything Republicans have done and are doing to make it harder and harder, and maybe now impossible, for Democrats to win elections. This is the moment. We are the oldest democracy in the world. We could effectively lose it in 2022. This is not about whether we cover orthodontics in the ACA. This is big. So that brings us back to the filibuster. You know that many, if not most, if not virtually all Democratic senators are for getting rid of the filibuster. We don't know the exact count. Now, here's one argument that's presented against Democrats getting rid of the filibuster. Hey, be careful, because one of these days Republicans will get the White House and both houses in Congress, and you'll rue the day that they got rid of the filibuster. Okay, here's my response to that. First, they do that anyway if they felt it was in their best interest. So why didn't they? Why didn't they in 2017 when they had the White House and both houses of Congress? Well, they didn't need to, because Republicans don't really want to do anything other than pack the courts and cut taxes. And they could and did both with just 51 votes. Tax cuts they did in reconciliation. They tried to unravel the ACA, also in reconciliation. John McCain gave the thumbs down on that. They got all their Federalist Society judges in, because federal judges have been at 51 since 2014, and they expanded that for the Supreme Court for Neil Gorsuch. They don't really want to do anything else. They have no real agenda of things they want to do. They're Republicans. They're today's Republicans. They don't want to do anything. And the Supreme Court does the rest. The Supreme Court did Shelby County, unraveling the Voting Rights Act. That was a 5-4 court. It's now 6-3. We do know that both Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema have repeatedly said they will not vote to get rid of the filibuster, and there's, I guess, every reason to believe them. So what do we do? Well, Joe Manchin has said that he wants the Senate to work in a bipartisan way, which it just isn't going to. It isn't going to do that anytime soon. But Manchin has said if Republicans refuse to play ball, refuse to act responsible, then he is open to a modification of the filibuster. And if you're an obsessive listener of this podcast, you know that political scientist Norm Ornstein and I have been proposing a modification of the filibuster for 12 years, and we've been modifying that modification. And the stakes are so high here, the future of our democracy. I think that push comes to shove, that Manchin, who I know pretty well, and I would hope Sinema would go for this, because it doesn't get rid of the filibuster, but let me tell you what it does do. Right now, in order to break a filibuster, you need 60 votes. I always thought that was crazy from the day I got there. The burden should be on those who are filibustering. Instead of the majority needing 60 votes to show up and vote to end the filibuster, 41 senators should have to show up and vote to continue a filibuster. Right now, it takes one senator to filibuster. One senator can just go, "I object," and you have a filibuster. Now, on the vote for the January 6th commission that went down, the filibuster killed it because Democrats couldn't get 60 votes. But only 35 Republicans voted to sustain that filibuster. Now, I suppose if they had to, McConnell would have mustered the 41 votes. But here's the principle. Make the senators who are filibustering, make them have the skin in the game. If you care enough about something to filibuster, you show up. And now here's our wrinkle. The majority leader calls a vote on the filibuster. 41 senators have to vote to sustain the filibuster or it's over. But, and here's the but, they have to stay there. They have to keep 41 on the floor. And it's a talking filibuster. You have to talk. You have to debate. You have to hold the floor. No one has to talk for 24 hours like Strom Thurmond did. There's 41 of you. Josh Hawley can speak for 4 minutes and hand it off to Rand Paul. Rand Paul can hand it off to Ted Cruz. But no green eggs and ham. This is a debate, and what you're saying has to be germane. So they would have to explain why it should be a crime to give someone online to vote, to give them water. I want them to have to take the pro, it's a crime to give water to someone who's been standing in line for hours side. And I'd like to take the other side. You know, you don't see much debate in the Senate. This would be a good debate to have, and I think people would watch it. By the way, here's the argument that I've gotten to why it should be a crime to give someone water standing in line to vote. I've literally gotten this a couple times. Well, Al, it's illegal to electioneer within a certain distance to a polling place, so someone could give you water and use it as a cover to electioneer. Okay, you're right. It is illegal to electioneer in a voting line. So if you give someone water as a cover to electioneer, then that person or someone else in line who overhears the conversation can say, "Hey, you're electioneering. That's illegal." Which is exactly the same as someone who comes up to you without water and starts electioneering. It's the same thing, except someone gets water. "Hey, that guy just hit that woman over the head and took her purse." "Yeah, but he gave her water first, so I guess it's okay." Hey, everybody, before you write a comment on my YouTube channel, just try thinking it through first, okay? The point here is that there are 50 Republican senators. 41 of them would have to be on the Senate floor around the clock. There have to always be 41 of them. By my math, that gives each one about 5 hours off the floor each day. Chuck Grassley is not going to want to stay on the floor 19 hours a day for days and days. "Hey, guys, I'm I'm 87 years old. This is going to kill me. The filibuster was designed to give the minority a chance to object to something they really care about and hold the floor. I'd like to think that we would do it if our democracy were at stake. We're the oldest democracy in the world. Hitler didn't end our democracy. Tojo didn't end our democracy. The Confederacy didn't end our democracy. Let's not let Mitch McConnell end our democracy. Okay. Before I go to Ed Shelby, my communications director in the Senate, I just want to segue from that high drama to promote something I'm doing with Alan Zweibel. I'm doing a virtual event with Alan on Sunday, June 13th. Zweibel was one of the original SNL writers. There were, I think, 12 of us, including a number who are gone now, my old partner, Tom Davis. Zweibel and all the original writers left after the first 5 years. Alan did not come back, but went on to do great work with Rob Reiner, Gary Shandling, Billy Crystal, Larry David. I came back to SNL and worked with Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman and Chris Farley and Kevin Nealon, and then went on to work with Tom Cotton, Mitch McConnell, and Ted Cruz. And I asked Alan to do this conversation with me because, well, he was available. So that's Sunday, June 13th, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can go to alfranken.com/appearances for details. And that's either alfranken.com/appearances or alfranken.com/appearances. I don't know the difference. And I don't know who does. Anyway, you can go there for details, and the conversation will be fun. Speaking of which, time for my old communications director, Ed Shelby. I have to tell you, I would be happy to do this podcast with Ed as my permanent co-host. Well, not, you know, my sidekick, I guess. He was a brilliant, amazingly effective con director, but also just a wonderful friend. And believe me, you'll enjoy this, unless you're that jerk who wrote about giving water to people in line to vote. It's a great one, for a change. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. that means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
So you were my... communications guy? Is that, what was your title?
Deputy Chief of Staff, but oversaw the communications team.
You were the Deputy Chief of Staff?
Yep, you promoted me, and you gave me a sizable raise when I got that promotion, too.
That was done without my okay.
Jeff did that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, Jeff was Chief of Staff. Mm-hmm. Okay, well.
So, but yeah, I started with you in as your press secretary in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And then became your comms director and deputy chief of staff and was there for 7 years total. I worked for you for 7 years.
Yeah, so you saw a lot of me.
And a lot of you. We traveled quite a bit together, too. Yeah.
So because you're my communications director, how would you tell me to do this interview? What would you tell me? I didn't prepare you for that question.
We had to have thorough prep sessions to go over every possible eventuality of tough questions and things to avoid, if you'll recall.
And did that always work?
Absolutely. You've never made a mistake in an interview one time. It was flawless execution.
Yeah.
My favorite, well, no, there's a lot to choose from. But from the of the things we did ample prep for and then just went off the rails were the MSNBC's Ari Melber. Do you remember this interview?
I do.
So you just won overwhelmingly your 2014
right.
reelect by over 200,000 votes. Ari Melber wants to do a long sit down with you about the race and about your agenda. And it's just great, sort of like we're past this tough reelection, do a sit down in the office. We do hours and hours of prep. The last thing we talk about is, this is December of 2014. No one has announced they're running for president in 2016. But there's like chatter that Bernie may be getting in and Hillary's obviously probably getting in. And we do a, you know, question, if he asks you about the presidential, just say, no one's in yet and no one's announced.
I don't remember that.
Okay, well, that's clear.
And certainly didn't when the question was asked. So I surprised you.
You surprised me. You surprised Ari Melber. You mean you surprised the audience? So basically, Ari Melber asks some vague question about the presidential.
Mm-hmm.
You start thinking aloud and talking about, well, if Hillary runs, I'd probably endorse her. So yeah, I think that's a good idea. Yeah. You know what? I think about it. Like, if you want to call this an endorsement, you can call this an
endorsement.
Well,
he says, so you're endorsing Hillary.
And
I go, yeah, I guess I am.
And we got the Huffington posted a story the next day, the headline of which was Al Franken realizes mid-sentence he's endorsing Hillary Clinton for president.
Well, that's terrible communications work. So congratulations.
It was actually, no, it was great communications work because we had prepared you for it. Just didn't.
Yeah, well, okay. We sometimes, I mean, you guys, I will say you did a great job always preparing me. I felt very prepared, and sometimes I what was my problem? Why?
you're too honest. You're too smart. I think part of the I mean, we talked about this a little bit when you were writing Giant of the Senate, yeah. Which was that you spent your career seeking truth and correcting people who were lying and all of that, and so it was difficult for you to have a coy answer or sort of like a politician-y answer and things. Because if somebody asked you a question, you would answer it.
Which is a big mistake. But I you weren't with me during that first campaign, but they tried to teach me to pivot. And that's, you know, of course you know pivoting, but for the audience, that's when you're asked something and you don't answer it. But you pivot to something else. And I just couldn't get it, you know. And so, for example, I was very proud of myself when I'm in New Ulm, Minnesota, and there's a statue to Hermann the German, right? This is this Hun who defeated the Romans a long time ago. And I'm there, and I'm from St. Louis Park, which is called St. Jewish Park in Minnesota. And I'm under the statue, this huge statue of Hermann the German, and I have... I'm very tempted to say, you know, in St. Louis Park, we have Stu the Jew. And so I don't. And I go to my staff afterward, the Jess McIntosh, and I say, I didn't do this. She said, that's great. Good for you. And then like someone from either New York Magazine or the New York Times or someone comes to watch the campaign. And, you know, I said, oh, I have this problem. And I said, well, did you ever, you know, really internalize this and not, you know, telling jokes? I go, yes. And then I tell him the Stew the Jew joke. And it's on the thing. And then Jess goes like, why did you do that? And I go, I don't know. And, and then she taught me to pivot. And I took it really seriously because I realized I just didn't know. Then she set up an interview in which I pivoted so egregiously that I was just having fun. And at the end of the interview, the guy from the Strib said, I think he's got a real shot. So, I mean, that taught me a lot, but I still didn't do it great.
Listen, you gave great interviews. You are smart, thoughtful. The politician, some of the characteristics you did not have. Like the thing we've talked about was when if we were being hounded by like crazy Fox News or Newsmax reporters in the halls of the Senate, and I would, you know, early on I would hand you a phone to be like, oh, you've got a phone call, and you'd take the phone and be like, there's nobody here. What do you mean? And I'd say like, oh, I think Casey needs to talk to you. Casey's not on the phone. What are you doing? There's nothing here. And just what you would not take the hint like, I'm trying to help you, man. I'm really trying to help you.
No, you're not. There's nobody on the phone. Oh, yeah, I was kind of stupid. But then I learned, and then I just took the phone, and I went, good to talk to you, Mr. President. This is during Barack. Actually, at a certain point, it got so bad because I was always on the phone. I just didn't do national press. I just didn't do press. So at one point, I just I was walking. I wasn't on the phone. I didn't have my phone handy. So I just went like this,
which is the phone, like
yeah,
pinky,
I had my
pinky thumb
on my at my mouth and my thumb on my ear, and I would say I'm talking to somebody. And they appreciated that because they knew that everybody does that. You know, that's what you got with me. So you guys had to put me through the dehumorizer a lot.
The dehumorizer was, yes. Your instinct always was to go for
the joke
even if it was not in anybody's strategic interest or in service of passing
maybe
a piece
even
of legislation.
Especially if it was in no one's strategic interest. Well, on the first day, I get sworn in, take the subway, go to my desk, and I learn one of your jobs is writing notes to constituents, a congratulatory note. And in Minnesota, most of those are some kind of curling award. But this one was Ruth Anderson was turning 110. So I have this note card to write to her, and I go, you have a bright future. And at that point, Drew Lippmann was my chief staff, and my assistant comes and takes it out of the room, and Drew's back in about 15 seconds. What is this? I say, it's a joke. Uh-huh. Do you think Ruth Anderson will find it funny? And I go, like, I don't know. She's 110. And he goes, well, how about her son? Or, you know, her family. Will her son find it funny? And I go, oh, I see what you mean, because I could see her 90-year-old son reading this and getting mad. So I went, okay, I'll rewrite it. So that was day one, and I got better. I did, but I blew it sometimes.
Occasionally. Do you remember the state fair? It was 2017. Mm-hmm. 2016 state fair. You were being profiled by the new York Times. Mark Leibovich came, great reporter, was traveling with us. He came to D.C. He went with you to the convention in Cleveland, the Republican convention. We were in Minnesota. And that morning, Anthony Weiner's latest transgression, you know, had come out, and Huma had announced that they were getting divorced. Did you remember this?
Yes.
And Mark Leibovich is tagging along with us throughout Minnesota. First stop of the day is to go to the new Viking Stadium, which is a gorgeous facility. We're tagging along with women of color who are like engineers who would help build the stadium.
Yeah. And a lot of apprentice people had worked on a thing. And
we go to the Viking Stadium, walk on the field. It's great. We got to go to the locker room.
And Leibovich is a huge, huge football fan. He wrote a book called Big Game. He's like, He's a huge, huge.
So he's and all of us are just loving it because it's so such a cool thing to be in this brand new stadium. And then we go from the stadium to the state fair, which
he drives me, actually.
Oh, I didn't realize he drove you.
He drove me, and we're in the car, and he's talking to me, and he tells me that earlier that morning he had done an interview on Anthony Weiner, and because he knew some stuff, and he just hated it because he didn't want to be the expert or an expert on Anthony Weiner. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about Anthony Weiner, and then we arrive at the Farmers Union booth or coffee booth.
Yep.
And my son calls me, and I answer the phone, and he tells me that Teddy Bridgewater, who was our first draft and this unbelievably talented quarterback, had blown out his knee and may never play pro football. And all our hopes, and this is my son, who's a Viking fanatic, and I'm just going, oh, no. And then Leibovich goes, what happened? You know, what happened? Like, oh, then I tell him, and he goes like, well, what's that like for you? And then, stupidly, I say what?
You said, it's just as bad as if you found out Hillary was dating Anthony Weiner. And here we are on the day that Huma has announced her divorce with the New York Times reporter who has most frequently covered this after coming from the Viking Stadium. And I'm, you know, you can't, in front of reporters like that, you can't say, like, what in the shit is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's like, it's as if the worst thing happened. Yep.
And so I try to keep a straight face, and I can't remember. I think I went and called the Clinton campaign and said, like, you'll be receiving an apology shortly. Because what Leibovich, and totally, totally understandably, he tweeted it. I mean, he just tweeted it out because he thought, it, you know, he told us he thought it was funny.
He had to, but he apologized to me later, you know, and it didn't help things. But it ultimately, it was fine. Now, other things at the fair.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus.
Well, okay, one day we're... Now, I love the corn at the fair. Mm-hmm. I just love... And I got to tell you, anybody who goes to the Minnesota State Fair is great, okay? And this year it'll be open, I'm sure. Okay, and their corn, their sweet corn, is so good. I have been going there since I was a child. Never had a bad ear of corn. Mm-hmm. Never had an ear that wasn't fabulous. And I love the corn. I think I can't emphasize that enough. So I go to the booth, I get the corn, and we're just walking around. We see Al Roker with Andrew Zimmern, right?
This is not correct. You're not doing the story correctly.
Well, correct me.
Can I share with you? So this is the first day of the fair.
First, okay. Did I say it wasn't?
I don't know what you said, but you didn't buy it. They had the corn at the thing. Let me tell it. So you had done Fox 9. Okay. You did Fox 9, their early show. So it's like 7 a.m. You go, you do the early show. We walk out. We see a huge crowd of people. Who is there on opening day to talk about the great state fair? But Al Roker, who is there with Andrew Zimmern, who famous chef,
from Minnesota,
and you know him from NBC days. So we
Roker,
So we say like, Roker. Let's see if we can, you know, maybe Al could get on because they're talking about all the state fair foods and where it comes from, and I mean it's just perfect for you. So commercial break. So we say like, oh, Al would love to join. They're like, great, we'll have Al on. You're the only person I know in the universe who can walk on to the Today Show. Invite yourself on as just an impromptu guest. So you go in. So the three of you are talking about food. The first thing they get to is the corn. So there's corn they have there.
Oh, okay. That sounds right.
Somebody says like, oh, I think, Al, you like the corn. You take the corn. This is like a six-minute segment where they're going through all of the different foods.
Right.
Al Roker, Andrew Zimmern. And you say no words. All you do is just eat the corn is very gentle. Violently eating this corn on live television, on the Today Show for the entire 6 minutes.
Savoring the corn.
Mm.
And I thought comedically, as a comedian, that that was the funniest thing I could do.
This is
from a communications director standpoint, you thought I should say something.
typically, when they teach you media relations in school, they tell you it's best if you want to communicate a message to speak and not just to eat.
And I saw you motioning me to speak. I saw that. I saw you.
This is giving – I mean, this is really triggering for me telling this story because this was the biggest missed media relations opportunity I've ever experienced.
But it wasn't. I was hilarious. I if I do say so myself, I've seen the tape of it. And what it is I made – I silently made an amazingly strong point, which is the corn is really good.
They bump – so they – somebody – I think somebody tries to get you out of it to like say like, so Al, that corn looks pretty good to sort of like see if they can snap you out of the daze that you've experienced with the corn. And you just look up and say, mm-hmm, and then just keep
mouthful
corn. Then they bump back to the anchors who say like – gosh, I think Al Franken just loves that corn or something like that.
Yeah.
And I guess you're right. If that was the message you were trying to convey, was it the single message that Al Franken likes corn, you did a spectacular job of that. That was a win.
I liked silent movies. I liked some of those. I liked Lauren Hardy. I liked Buster Keaton. I thought that I was in a silent movie.
Mm-hmm. Most viewers, I mean, that's it's been poll tested that most Today Show viewers also love silent movies in which there was less talking on the 4-hour morning talk show.
That used to be more the case when the Today Show started in the 50s.
Even then, though, people spoke occasionally.
Okay. We'll just agree to disagree.
All of this is, can we just say, all of this is negative making fun of you. Working for you was great. We had a great time in the office.
Oh, there's that.
There was such a... It wasn't all missteps.
We had a great time, I will say. And because of that, I had continuity. I had wonderful continuity. People didn't leave the office.
No, I mean, your management team, most of us were there, if not the entire time, the vast majority of the time you were in the Senate. You know, we have still the Franken family universe is really, really close. We still have, remember the area of outside of your office we called the pit, which is where the scheduling team was, the communications team.
Yeah, it was in the whole office, was outside my
It was outside your yeah, right. It was outside your personal
the pit. Yeah. Pit,
yeah. We still have a text chain called the pit of all the people who worked there that share stories and articles and stuff. And it was great. It was such a fun office.
Oh, story. I know a story to tell regarding the staff, the whole staff. So I loved hearings. I loved committee hearings. And as you know, I really prepared and I read everything. And we can talk a little bit about that. Focus on the family. Let's talk about that one.
Great organization.
Yeah. Okay. They're a Christian, very right-wing Christian organization, and they're very anti-gay.
Yeah. They're a horror show. They're a horror show of an organization.
Okay. So we're doing a thing on same-sex. Or same
it's DOMA. It's DOMA. I think it's on the Defense of Marriage Act.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's a hearing.
And this guy, what was his name? I can't remember.
Thomas Minnery.
Okay. He's testifying. So the night before, I would always get, this is in judiciary, I believe, and I get my staff, the judiciary staff, prepares a briefing book for me, and it has the testimony. And I read his testimony, and I spot something, which is the Ninth Circuit had ruled, I think it overturned Prop
8.
Or something, which was banned same-gender marriage in California, and they overruled it, and part of their finding was that same-gender couples did just as well in child-rearing. So he kind of has to acknowledge it, but just kind of brushes by it. And then, as far away from that as he can, he says this Health and Human Services report said that married heterosexual couples do better
at raising children. Yeah,
at raising children. That's the opposite of what the Ninth Circuit had said. And I went like, okay, the reason he put these far apart from each other was he's lying. So I know that. And so I call, I think it was Josh Riley, and I say, find this report and see what it says, because I don't think it says what he says it says. And of course it didn't. Mm-hmm. It didn't at all. It just said married or couples that are together do better. And it didn't say anything about same sex or anything. Nothing like that.
The clip is on YouTube. If you just type in "Focus on the Family," Al Franken.
He doesn't look good.
But it is the most. It is the most satisfying thing.
Mr. Minery, on page 8 of your written testimony, you write, "quote, children living in their own married biological or adoptive mothers with their own married biological and or adoptive mothers and fathers were generally healthier and happier, had better access to health care, less likely to suffer mild or severe emotional problems, did better in school, were protected from physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, and almost never live in poverty compared with children in any other family form." You cite a Department of Health and Human Services study that I have right here from December 2010 to support this conclusion. I checked the study out. And I would like to enter it into the record, if I may.
Objections ordered.
And it actually doesn't say what you said it says. It says that nuclear families, not opposite sex married families, are associated with those positive outcomes. Isn't it true, Mr. Minery, that a married same-sex couple that has had or adopted kids would fall under the definition of a nuclear family in the study that you cite?
I would think that the study, when it cites nuclear families, would mean a family headed by a husband and wife.
It doesn't.
So I have. Can I share with you my first day in the office?
Your first day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember this story? I've told
you. Oh, is this the fair?
No, the fair.
Also the fair, yeah.
Fine, I get the job with you. I cannot be more excited. Longtime fan, read the books, all of it. Just so excited. You know, I called my parents and told them the first day I'm going to work for you, I'm going out to Minnesota and it's going to be at the fair. So this is the first day I get there. So I fly out there, me and Mark Kimball, who I had actually he was our state comms guy.
Yeah.
And he and I had worked together before.
Great guy.
He's
wonderful, great guy.
Yeah. He and I worked together before. He was at the Minnesota branch of the Children's Defense Fund and I was at the D.C. branch of the Children's Defense Fund. So we had known each other for a while and worked with each other. So he and I are staffing you. And at the fair, basically all of the radio stations almost throughout the state broadcast from there. They have these booths there. So we go to a radio station called KFAN, which is sports, and you're supposed to talk about the Twins. It's sort of what you do because you're a longtime Twins fan. And they share a booth with their sister station, which is a conservative talk radio station, KLTK. And we are walking past the KLTK booth and some producer from their like right wing show that's on comes out and starts heckling you and grabbing his crotch and saying, "Be a man and come on the show." And instead of just walking past him and going to the show, you decided
you should do.
Yes, you should do.
Yeah.
You stopped and engaged him and you guys have some sort of back and forth. We then go to the KFAN interview. So you sit down. I'm already a little rattled, like, that was a lot of intensity for So we go to the cafe, and you're supposed to be talking about the
Twins.
The Twins, and they ask you about the Muslim Cultural Center that was being built close to the
9/11 site.
Yeah. And you get visibly frustrated. This is in front of a live audience in addition to being on the radio. The producer who heckled you comes over and gets in line to ask a question. Before he gets to his question, you, having had this interaction that no one else has seen, else has seen this interaction, kind of go after this guy like, "Tell them where you work, tell them where." And no one's like, why is he yelling at this man? So then we leave. The heckler guy continues to heckle you. It's like the most chaotic thing I've been. It's my first day.
we get to the car and you said something very nonchalant, like, I don't think I like that, or something very like very. And I was like, oh, my God, what did I just do? What did I sign up for? The next day, KTLK, the conservative talk radio show, does a show and talks about this interaction and how once you come over and you won't do interviews on their station and all that, and calls me and Mark Kimball, who are both husky guys. He's like, refer to us as your doughboy handlers. And they were recounting this and saying, and their doughboy handlers whisked him away, and the doughboy handlers tried to get him. And so we have that first day. We have the second day where I'm talked about on the radio. And then I go back to the hotel, and I remember I ordered a rum and coke and called my mom and said, like, I'm not sure this was the best idea.
Yeah, that was a rough go. I mean,
in fairness,
he was a jerk.
He was an asshole.
He was a real jerk.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and I know you ignore a jerk, and that's what you do. And I think this is pretty early in my.
Yeah, it's 2010.
Yeah. So just, I think I learned, right? I didn't engage jerks. At least I did it at a lower percentage of the time.
A lower percentage. That's good. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with Ed Shelby, my former communications director, Ed Shelby.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
We're back with Ed Shelby. So we were on the road a lot, and sometimes we'd go to L.A. when I did a show.
Yeah, we did. We went to L.A. several times.
Yeah, to do Conan and to do
Kimmel.
Kimmel.
Bill Maher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Carl Reiner was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And Carl was in his mid-90s, early to mid-90s at this time. So he lived in the flats of Beverly Hills, and he was just, he didn't leave his home because he's 90-something. So I would, whenever I was in L.A., I'd just make sure I stopped by, and he's the sweetest.
And right, and he lived like around the corner from Mel Brooks, and they went on daily walks together, right? Wasn't that the thing they did together?
Yeah, and I had dinner with Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. And we talked about your show of shows, which was Sid Caesar's show. And, oh, my God, we had knockwurst and boiled potatoes and string beans. but, wow, that was we'll cherish that. But you came, so I brought you, right?
A couple of times. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, I mean, it wasn't just me. You brought whenever kind of was staffer was with you, you always – I mean, which was sort of – really, really nice and I think unusual, would bring the staffer to whatever fun, cool thing you were doing. Because I know like Jake Fons, who's one of your fundraisers, got to go to Carl Reiner's house a couple. I mean, it was just such a – and you'd go
– Part of it was that Carl was the biggest was sweetheart in the world.
But it was such a surreal experience to just sit – I mean, it was just, it was just checking in. You'd go to his house, to be Carano's house. He'd invite you. We went up to his, like, kind of his workstation living area. He'd kind of regale you with all these tweets, right? He'd show you the tweets he was really proud of recently. And he was doing, at the time, I think one of the times we went, he was writing a book. Or it was movie posters of old movies. And was, like, showing us all the posters he found. And then he had his book on the Dick Van Dyke Show that he had just written. And gave you a copy.
signed it.
I love that show.
I love that show. Well, that's, I mean, that's one of the things that was so cool was I grew up with that with my parents, right? I mean, right. We watched that on Nick at Night and just loved it. And I think I shared that with him, and he said, well, I'll get you a book too. But the only copies he had were signed. So he plucked one out, crossed out the person's name, and said to Ed, you can tell them you're more important than Joy, whoever it's written to.
Yeah, always funny. He was
just could not have been nicer. So that was like one of my fondest memories. Because it was just, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, then remember that room we take, you know, sometimes you take a picture of the two of you, and his room had like 1,000 Emmys in it. It just lying
yes,
on the
yeah,
wall.
Yeah.
That was a really cool, amazing experience. And he was so, so incredibly kind. But the other LA trip that I remember well is when you did a segment on Bill Maher's show, and we're going to go to dinner with him after, and him and Sarah Silverman. And you asked me, like, do you have plans? And I was like, no, I'm probably going to eat in the hotel. And you were like, well, why don't you come along?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that would be fun. And I'm thinking it's going to be 10 people. And it's the three of you and me. It's Al Franken, Sarah Silverman, Bill Maher, and me.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was so fun. But that was so sweet of you to ask me to come, which was so.
You're my friend.
Well, at the time you were paying, it was your staffer, you were paying me. Or the taxpayers were paying me. I'm sorry, the taxpayers.
I felt that I could pay you to be my friend. the staff, everybody in the staff really became my friend.
Well, yeah, but I think that's really unusual. I think that's unique on the Hill.
So I think with some senators, it's also the case. But we really had a tight group.
Yeah.
Well, and they did great work. I will say that. We were known as having one of the best staffs.
Well, the other thing I remember is the holiday parties that you and Franny would throw.
Mm-hmm.
And you got everybody on the staff amazing gifts every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I loved the most was when they redid the Senate floor for the first time in like 100 years. You guys somehow got some of the wood, do you remember this, from the Senate floor, cut it into pieces, and then laser etched, like, Happy Holidays to Ed Shelby from Al Franken with your, like, laser etched signature in this piece of the wood. I mean, it was just so cool.
Yeah. Well, you guys worked so hard, and, you know.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, and I appreciated it. That's pretty simple. You know, I mean. Yeah. So let's see. What have we not covered? Anything? That's it. That's it. That's all we have.
I have a couple other things.
Okay.
I have a couple other things, which we'll see if you want this in there. But one of the things we had to deal with as a staff, which I did not anticipate, was the eating habits in front in public.
Okay. You're talking about my habit of just eating anywhere, anytime.
It's more. Do you remember the show or the movie? Excuse me, the movie, The Miracle Worker with Patty Duke.
Yes.
You remember the scene where she runs around the table, banging on the table to get food?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was. She looks like Grace Kelly compared to you in some of the situations. You can soup food.
Oh, okay. You're talking about Maisie Hirono's party.
Yeah, so does that the same?
Okay.
Maisie Hirono, Senator, Hawaii, has an annual birthday party where she brings in a traditional Hawaiian food, and she had a whole roast suckling pig, which she really liked. And what's the thing you like most about
the skin?
Is the skin.
Yeah.
So there's a whole animal sitting in the middle of the room, and Al is eating the skin, but he's eating not just any part of this, he's eating the face skin. Sort of a Hannibal Lectery kind of just peeling this face skin off of this full pig and eating it from the face of the pig. And then they try to collect for the for the program part of the thing, and the room separates. So there's all these senators, including leadership on one side. There's the rest of the group who's attending this, dozens and dozens of people, and you in the center ripping pig skin.
I love.
And Maisie Hirono did the same thing that Al Roker did, which was like, Al, it looks like you're really enjoying the pig, to kind of get you to snap out of it. And you were like, yep, it's delicious.
There was that. There was also the one. This was a strange setup. But do you remember when Patrick Kennedy, the congressman from Rhode Island, retired,
You
had a relationship with him, and he retired. And this was early, probably 2010 or something. But when he retired, they had a big ceremony that you went to, and just as a guest because you liked him, and
we worked on mental health stuff,
right? Together. Yeah. And they had this table of food again in the middle, and they had put like the hummus kind of just on the table. Like it was not like in a bowl, but it was kind of, they just like spread it on like a big platter or something, but it was just this. So Nancy Pelosi is speaking, honoring Kennedy, and she motions to you to say like, oh, and Al Franken is here. And at that particular moment, you had your finger dragging in the hummus to get a little taste, just a little taste.
Yeah. And I have to make a decision on whether to edit that. It certainly doesn't make me look good.
It was fine. It was innocuous. It was fine.
Okay, what else you got? Oh, were you there when, you know, it's like take your kid to work day? Were you there at the event where, okay, it's all these staffers and everybody who works in the building brings their kids, and there was one room where, you know, they were having some reception or something, and there's all these kids there, and they're all very young, pretty young. So there's must be like there's 20 kids, and I say, okay, let's see if you guys can knock me over.
I don't think I was there for this.
No. Oh yeah, that was so much fun because they couldn't knock me over. And then I faked it that they knocked me over, and they were very happy.
Did you just tell that story so you could share with your audience how strong you are, that you couldn't be knocked over by a bunch of children?
By little kids?
They couldn't do it, so fun. I
thought maybe you were there. Maybe we'll skip that.
No, the one I was there for, the thing when you were talking about the dehumorizer, was the more important than you, more important than you going through the metal detectors.
Yeah.
In the Senate, everyone who, staff and visitors have to go through metal detectors and security screening. Senators do not. So they can walk through, and they can walk through with their staffs if they're with them around the security screen. And so when Al would do that, he would do it in the least conspicuous way by saying to everyone in line, I'm more important than you. I'm more important than you. Which most people
I just say
more important than you.
More important than you. More important than you. More important than you.
Which, in fairness, everyone thought was hilarious, right?
Right.
Almost. But I think Casey, your second chief of staff, Casey, said to you, it might get you in trouble at some point.
Yeah.
And it did.
Mark Teixeira, who was the first baseman for the Yankees at the time,
was in the security line, unbeknownst to you.
He was there probably to do some lobby for something good, I'm sure, or charity or something. But he tweeted out, Al Franken said he was more important than me.
And that was the end of that.
Like, oh, shit. Okay. Well, now it happened. Casey was right. But it was worth it because especially if you get there like at 9 in the morning and there's this huge line and everybody's trying to get in and it was brighten their day. I'd just go, more important than you, more important than you. And everybody thought it was funny because it was, except to Teixeira.
Right. Found himself very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
The other dehumorizer, well, this wasn't a dehumorizer story, but this was another media relations failure, was the welcome terrorist sign.
Oh, that
start to finish was just not a great day for our office. So the point was that I think this was during a potential, it was a government shutdown or something was about to happen.
There
was, and one of the things that would have been affected was like border security.
Right.
You did a floor speech assailing Republicans over their decision to do this and talked about all the stuff that the government would not be doing, all the services they wouldn't be providing, including border security. And in your great wisdom, you decided to make a giant sign that just said, welcome terrorists. This is what Republicans want. So you went to the floor with the sign that said, welcome terrorists, put it up next to you. And that was just a horrifying photo.
Mm-hmm.
The Star Tribune the next day did not one but two stories about it. It was the most shared, most read, most downloaded story of the day.
Did they say like
there was context? There was context in the story.
It's just the picture.
It just the photo.
But are people actually saying Al Franken is sending a signal?
Have you met the American public?
There are some people in the American... Well, anyway, so that I was advised against it, I will say. Oh, Betsy DeVos.
Great gal. Oh, great gal. Kind of woman you'd want to get a glass of wine with and gab, talk about the Dancing with the Stars or something. Just my favorite.
You make her sound like the principal, like Joan Cusack in School of Rock.
I mean, that was that whole period was a very dark period when the after Trump had won, before he was inaugurated, and just in the first couple of months after his inauguration, the parade of people who were coming in for meetings to do like courtesy meetings for cabinet positions was just one horrible person after another. But DeVos was special. Mm-hmm. She didn't know a damn thing about
anything.
She
knew nothing.
Yeah.
About
and education. She came in for the courtesy meeting, which before you go before the committee that's going to confirm you to move on to the position, you usually meet with the members just to talk about their priorities and all of that. And yeah. She came in and talked to you, and your experience with her was...
Basically, she had already had some of the courtesy meetings mm-hmm. with my colleagues. And the Democrats who I talked to, who had met with her, had said she doesn't know anything. So I got it in my head what I was going to ask her in the hearing, and I decided I was going to just test that. Does she not know anything? And it took me one or two questions to go, oh, okay. and then I just said, oh, I'm not gonna give away what I'm going to ask her about. So I just started talking about her family and kids. And so what I ended up asking her about, of course, was...
But in the hearing. You said nothing to her of substance in this courtesy meeting.
I didn't
want to
tip what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And I asked her the most basic educational policy question people have, which is growth versus proficiency. When you have to measure whether a school's succeeding or not, you have accountability tests. You have tests. And do the tests measure proficiency? Does the third grader meet third grade proficiency? And this is what NCLB required to be measured.
Yeah, No Child Left Behind, you're talking about.
Which was what percentage of your kids meet proficiency? And that was dumb on so many levels because teachers just taught to the middle. Because the kid at the top, no matter what you did, that kid would beat proficiency, and the kid at the bottom wasn't going to reach it. So that was perverse. And then also, the tests didn't measure where you were. They just measured with your third grade proficiency. So I was a big growth thing. And basically, we learned that growth was the way to go and not proficiency. But this was like every school board member in the country, mm-hmm. every teacher. Every principal, every parent who was paying attention knew this. And I asked her, and she... That actually was picked up by the mic. That wasn't me making a sound effect. That was from the hearing.
Archived audio. Yeah, that hearing was that was of the many hearings that you demonstrated the idiocy of the person in front of you. That was probably the biggest. I mean, that was just such a moment. And yet she served 4 years as Secretary of Education and did terrible things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, and you say the parade of terrible people mm-hmm. that came, they got actually, as the administration went on, some of the decent people left and were replaced by worse and worse and worse people. Till at the end, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, thank God we won.
Yeah,
thank God Biden won.
I know.
Man, oh, man.
Oh, I do have one, but I have this isn't a direct Biden story, but it is a separate Biden. It's a tangential Biden story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a staff related. Do you remember when Andy Osborne screwed up the flights to Joan Mondale's funeral?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You were so, I got to tell it, but you were so gracious about it, but it was so terrible.
Yeah. Well, I was somewhere on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And he just mixed up Central Time and Eastern Time.
Right. So what had happened was that he printed out your schedule for the day to give mm-hmm. to you. When he hole punched it, one of the times was hole punch through, so you couldn't read it. So he reprinted it, but printed it in the wrong time zone. So you got your schedule, wrong time zone, you get to the airport.
Plane is left.
Plane's gone. Not going to make it to Joan Mondale, who's the former second lady of the United States.
Who's
a friend of Al's. Minnesota, all this. So Al has to call Biden on Air Force Two to be like, I'm supposed to be there. I'm not. Can you make sure people know that I'm not skipping your funeral? And Biden said something nice about you. And I think you got it first, kind of some of the after stuff.
I got there at the end.
Yeah. But Andy, who was your body guy at the time, was just beside himself. He felt so bad. And the thing you said to him that made him feel so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this?
We all make mistakes.
You said the thing that JFK said to McNamara, I think.
No, it was what someone said about McNamara. He was chairman of Ford.
Yeah.
And it was, he doesn't make small mistakes.
And that's what you said to Andy, like, I'm glad you don't make small mistakes. Which he just thought was great and made him feel so much better.
Yeah, I think that is such a fabulous quote. I mean, he doesn't make small mistakes is one of my favorite lines from history. No, that's right. I mean, it was a small mistake, but it had, you know, I missed Joan Mondale's funeral. And speaking of which, Fritz died just a little while ago, and my God, what a great
man. I know.
Jesus. Lovely, lovely guy and strong, tough guy.
In Minnesota, he was engaged and involved till the very end. I mean, he really, really was in it for the service and truly believed all this stuff.
And really funny.
Yeah.
And just, just a great guy, just a Hamish guy. So that was part of the privilege of being senator, but I knew him from well before that.
Yeah.
And he also supported me. He believed in me before other people thought I could win.
Mm-hmm.
And stood by me when some people abandoned me. So I really, that was, you know, but he was 93?
Three.
Yeah. Okay, you know. No Ruth Anderson. Oh, my God. Well, this has been so much fun.
Thank you for having me. Loved working for you. All of us loved working for you. It was such a delight and so fun.
You know, like, it just right back at everybody on the staff. And miss you. Miss how much fun it was and the great stuff we accomplished. Well, thanks, Ed.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.